The Ticket.
Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub on the other side of the county. He is inside the MDN studios. Meanwhile, I'm inside the Webb studio. And, you know, Ira, you said something earlier in the show that I thought was so on point. You said last week was a long week, and it was indeed a long week. It's one that, you know, I think we will remember the rest of our lives. I mean, there are those times, those experiences in life, those moments in life that were something really, really meaningful. And sometimes not necessarily the in the most pleasant of ways. Obviously in these instances, far from pleasant. One of them being that while we were out, the death toll with the coronavirus surpassed 100,000 people here in this country, a mark that and at the initial onset of the pandemic here in this country, we saw numbers in the six figures, and we could see upwards of 100,000 to 200,000 people. It motivated, stark, immediate action. The shelter in place, the stay at home order, flatten the curve. We got all of those, those talking points, those buzz phrases, if you will, committed to memory, understood what they meant, and took appropriate action to slow the speed with which this virus was spreading. And the emphasis being on slow it down, because Ira, it was never, without a vaccine, this was never going to be about stopping the virus. We weren't going to be to a point where, we stay at home and, oh, we got it beat. Oh, the virus isn't going to spread anymore. This was just getting to the point where medical resources weren't so exhausted that the death toll would be even greater because they weren't able to treat. They weren't able to treat preventable deaths and or avoid preventable deaths. Well, we have been able to do that collectively with our action, but the virus is still spreading. The numbers that initially maybe they thought were projections that were too high in the 100,000 to 200,000 range, now they're realizing that those initial projections were really on point. And, as the number will continue to rise as we get closer to the fall, the key that we are trying to, to hit upon at this point is to avoid another spike where we'll see an exponential rise. Seems like, at least we were on that track. It's going to be interesting to see if we can stay on that track as we all come back online.
Sam, it was a when I say it was a hard week, I don't want to make it sound like, being at home is hard, right? It was just, we miss our people. We miss being around. There's a lot of news things going on out there in sports and beyond. You hit on obviously a big part of it right there. So it was a unique week, as, completely touching, detaching from everything is a really weird experience for us. And you didn't completely detach because you're still obviously running the website, but you're still a little more detached than normal during a week like we just had. So yeah, an unusual week. So I don't know if hard is necessarily even the right word, but very unusual. Great to be back here in the air chair, excited about the countdown to the scheduled start of the Michigan football season coming up in 96 days, but obviously a lot of things going on in the world around this country and beyond as well.
Yeah, and which brings us to the other really profound happening during the time we were away from the show, and that was the death of George Floyd at the hand of four police officers in Minneapolis. One of those police officers has been arrested. The unrest that came in the aftermath of that video coming out. And I said earlier in the show, I wonder if Steve Jobs really could really foresee the wide ranging use and impact of putting a camera on a phone. I mean, it has completely changed the conversation around, you know, police-citizen interaction, and specifically police and the in their interaction with black men. And so for certainly my entire life, for generations, that has been, you know, that has been a, you know, a sore spot, a talking point in education that you impart upon your kids, your young family. You raise them up to know that there, you know, when it comes to interacting with police, that there is going to be, you know, there needs to be caution and care when it comes to, you know, how those interactions go down, because of the history of disproportionate treatment. Now, it's important that as we have this discussion, to not overly general, you know, not to not have generalizations that are too, you know, are too broad. I mean, there's going to be some generalizations when you talk about police and black people, right? But don't make it too broad in saying all police. I'm not of the mind that all police view black men or view black people like those four police officers in Minneapolis view George Floyd, because clearly there was a blatant disregard for his life for whatever reason. You know, it would seem to be part of a theme of a devaluing, because here he is, you know, handcuffed, clearly subdued, and you got three officers kneeling on him with their knees on various parts of his body. The officer that has been charged had his knee on his neck, to the point where you had people, bystanders around, with one officer kind of keeping him back. You know, standing guard, so to speak, people around say, hey, you're killing him. And he was saying, you're killing me. And it gets to the point where, you know, a physical restraint of him on the ground lasts, what, you know, 8-9 minutes. And the last couple of them, you know, over two, almost 3 minutes, he's unresponsive. One of the officers checks for a pulse, and they say he's unresponsive. And the officer that's been charged kept his knee on George Floyd's neck for another close to 3 minutes. And so the reaction to that from, and not just black people. So it's also important to note that. But the reaction to that across this country has been visceral. It has been, you know, to me, a indicative of pent up frustration. It is important to keep in context the number of, you know, the number of cases that we are talking about in the aftermath of some peaceful protests, like the one that, you know, the juxtaposition of this latest case and the peaceful protests that we saw during the season, and now seeing the reaction to this one, it's like, you know, you cannot condone, you know, some of the kinds of protests that we've seen, like this looting. I have no time, no patience, no tolerance for, you know, the people that are opportunistic, that are using this tragedy and the protests that's come from it for personal gain, that it has nothing to do with their rights. Just, you know, stealing and thievery and, you know, just a purpose no bigger than themselves. That I just have no time or patience for that. You know, the images of those people getting arrested, I actually applaud personally, but the tone and tenor of the frustration, the mood of impatience for something that people should collectively be impatient about, I am absolutely with. And it's, you know, to me, it's no coincidence that in Minneapolis that the, you know, it was a powder keg of sorts, because this is, it's on the heels of Philando Castile a couple of years ago, where, you know, I described the case earlier, where here you have him, you know, a black man is his girlfriend or 5-year-old daughter in the backseat. They get pulled over by the police. The police, you know, one of the police said that Philando Castile had fit the description of a robbery suspect from a couple of days prior. Told them, though, that he pulled them over for a you know, broken taillight or something like that. Something so he could investigate further. He said he smelled marijuana as he approached the car, but didn't say anything about that. He just, because he didn't want to, he said he didn't want to spook him. But, you know, these things that are influencing his perception of the situation. He fits the description of a robbery suspect. I smell marijuana. And so as he walks up on the car and explains that he pulled him up for a taillight, that's when Philando Castile informs the officers, I have a weapon in the car. It's a licensed weapon. He has the permit in his pocket or in his wallet. And the cops said, don't reach for it. He said, I'm not reaching for it. You know, but the cop had asked Philando Castile for his license and registration. I'm going to need to see your license and registration, like cops do, right? And so he goes to get his license and registration, and the cop says, don't reach for the gun. He said, I'm not. And he is reaching for the wallet. This is all on video, by the way. And as he's reaching for his wallet, the cop fires 7 shots into the vehicle. You know, mind you, he had asked him for his wallet or his ID and registration. And keep in mind that you have, I mean, even if you look past that, he has his girlfriend in the car. There's a 5-year-old in the back, and the cop still fired 7 shots into the car. And he was ultimately acquitted. He was charged and ultimately acquitted of the charge in that case. So in the aftermath of that, to see the kind of unrest, the kind of intolerance for another example of that kind of treatment, I'm certainly not surprised, but at the same time hopeful that this incident is not one, this loss of life is not in vain, that the emotion that we are feeling, many of us are feeling collectively, rises to some greater purpose beyond the catharsis of the moment, that, you know, there can truly be some kind of change that comes as a result of this, because what you see people protesting now is not just about that death, and it's not just about the ultimate example of disproportionate policing, and that is the higher rate of police involved shootings and deaths, and in this particular case, unarmed black men. The stat that I saw was, you know, 5 times more likely to be unarmed black man is 5 times more likely to be to be killed by a police officer. Now, you know, these are not, as was pointed out so frequently to me on Twitter as we had this discussion, these are not, you know, commonplace occurrences when it comes to police interactions. Not like every stop results in a shooting. I'm certainly not suggesting that that's the case. But we can expand this more broadly and talk about disproportionate policing in general. You know, I think that's where whether you're talking about stops, arrests, punishment, you know, all of those are disproportionately impactful when it comes to black people. And this is obviously a response to that. And, you know, no one is suggesting, hey, are there other problems in society? Are there other problems in the black community? Absolutely. Absolutely, that is the case. No one, you know, it's as if, you know, the reaction to this problem is somehow inappropriate in the eyes of some because why are you focused on this when you should be focused on that? Why can't we focus on it all? You know, to me, the reason why you see, you know, the reaction to this be so pointed when there are so many problems, so many instances of what we perceive to be systemic oppression. This is the most immediate iteration of it, right? All other instances of what we perceive to be systemic oppression are cumulative. So schooling, housing, access to healthcare, you experience those effects over time. You experience those disparities over time, and they can be, you know, this is the other thing. They can be mitigated to a certain extent, right? Through education, through improvement in your socioeconomic status. That's, you know, frankly, one of the things that in the Black community we need to be mindful of. Just because you attain more education, you attain some level of affluence, you are able to escape some of those barriers that we talked about, that I just talked about, it's still a huge portion of your community, of our community, that can escape those barriers. And you only escape them to a certain extent. So, but again, when it comes to policing, you feel those effects in the moment. And it's one of those things where scholarship or affluence, they are not a shield. They're no more a shield for, you know, for you or I or LeBron James than they are for you or I. And I think that, and that's one of the reasons why, I think you see them speaking up, standing up or kneeling, right? Part of it is altruistic sense of purpose, care about the community, but, you know, part of it is personal too, because they know it still affects them, and their kids. But at the end of the day, you know, to me, I'm heartened by the reaction that not just across racial lines, because, you know, you look at any movement, certainly a lot of focus on the civil rights movement. That's not just the Black movement. You had Black and white people of, it's certainly a lot of young people, very, very involved in that. So it's not rare to see, racists coming together for a cause like this. What I find rare and heartening in this particular instance is the response that I've seen from some police. And I point to, you know, my hometown in Flint, and it's a video that has since gone viral. It's a video that's been featured on the national news. That's the sheriff up there joining the protest and saying, I'm walking with you. And that to me has to be one of the, if there's going to be change, that has to be one of the big takeaways, that, you know, the behavior, the conduct that we saw on that video, the conduct that we saw in the Philando Castile video, that's not indicative of all police, but I think it's indicative of a culture that allows cover for police that have the attitudes that lead to that kind of conduct. And so until you have more officers speaking out, standing up, calling out what they see within their ranks, the problem will persist. But it seems like we're seeing more police speaking out along those lines, which is crucial, because ultimately they get painted with that brush. They get blamed. They get, you know, the distrust is extended to them as a result of conduct that was not theirs, attitudes that they don't share, but because they share the same uniform, they get viewed through the same lens. And is that right or fair? You know, if you look at it from the other perspective, you don't know who you're dealing with. Just like a cop doesn't know who he or she is dealing with when they walk up to a car. You know, if you're Black, you feel like you don't know who you're dealing with when the cop comes up because of the disproportionate treatment. When, again, not all cops are like that. So to me, it is really a call to action for police officers that many of them are answering, saying, look, this is not the way that it's it should be done. These attitudes need to be rooted out, and they are a huge part of that change. And then it's going to be up to prosecutors to zealously prosecute these kinds of cases. I mean, you know, when the county attorney came out in this case and said there was evidence that does not support a charge, and they have to, you know, there's going to be a thorough investigation moving forward. And you're thinking, what are you talking about? He can only be talking about the coroner's report, which seemed to be somewhat deferential. And he seemed to be using that to color his commentary. But, you know, the irony is that the very next day, suddenly there's a charge. And that's the kind of, that's the kind of talk, the kind of sentiment that I think contributed to the unrest. It was almost a feeling like, here we go again. You know, here we see a video, a clear as day example of the mistreatment, of the killing of a person, and you seem to find some reason, you know, some window, some deference here for conduct for which there is no justification. Now, again, they ultimately came to that conclusion the next day, but now there is the charge where they say, well, we can't find intent in this action, which, again, you struggle to see when, you know, okay, you have your knee on George Floyd's neck for 6 or so minutes. Maybe you can't find intent there. But once one of the officers realizes he's unresponsive, checks for a pulse, says he can't find a pulse, and then you keep your knee on his neck for, you know, almost 3 minutes more, how you can't find intent in that, have no idea. But that is the kind of question and the kind of questioning you see coming from not just the Black community, certainly really audibly from the Black community, but you see that if you look at the protests across the country, you certainly see people on many sides of the racial aisle out there protesting what is disproportionate treatment. So a profound time, a profound moment, and a profound opportunity to really enact some change. And I want to stress, as I said before, I don't think it's an indictment of all cops. Far from it. But it is an indictment of the culture that allows cover for cops like the ones that were out there, last week that killed George Floyd. And then the other thing that I want to stress is I don't see this as a panacea. Like, this is the only problem, that once addressed, you know, it cures all the things that are wrong. No, it doesn't. But just because that's the case doesn't mean that you don't focus the kind of attention that's being focused on it now. Yeah, fix this problem and then work on the others. How about we fix it all, or try to? You know, we don't have to, just because this doesn't solve all the problem, don't deal with it. Absolutely deal with it. It is one of the barriers, one of the examples of one of those systemic kind of, and we can use the metaphor, you know, kind of the knee on the neck, so to speak. And we can remove that knee and then work on removing the others. You know, in case in point, you know, kind of removing the others, the other officers were arrested, right? Or not arrested, right? They were fired, not arrested. What does this say about, you know, the culture, the cover that I talked about, that you had those other three officers, two of them kneeling on them as well, the other standing out, none of them intervening? And that says something. That says it's not just about that one officer, and that none of them saw a need to intervene. Either they share the attitude, or they subscribe to, you know, that idea that you got to cover your guy, you got to cover your partner, you got to cover your You got to cover your fellow officer even in times like that. And that's the kind of thing that, certainly needs to be rooted out. It is 8:36 on a Monday morning. Certainly, the phone lines are open. If you have reaction, you want to speak, you have a point that you want to make, you are free to do so. At 734-998-1050. You can tweet us at Michigan Insider. Tweet me directly at SamWeb77. You can email us at studio@WTKA.com. Got to get to a break. Be back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050. WTKA, the ticket.
Our friends at Lewis Jewelers want to remind you that while these are unprecedented times, celebrations should not be canceled. That includes graduations, Father's Day, birthdays, and anniversaries. And Lewis Jewelers has you covered. Lewis Jewelers is now offering one-on-one in-store shopping by appointment. To schedule your appointment, please call or text 734-994-5111. That's 734-994-5111. Or you can shop retail to go with curbside pickup for online and phone orders. Not only has Lewis Jewelers been great for my family, me, my wife, her kids, my parents, and my sister, but Lewis Jewelers is also there for all of your needs and has, since the beginning, been supporting our frontline workers, the brave workers who service at grocery stores, mail and package delivery drivers, gas station attendants, convenience store workers, and, of course, all of our great healthcare workers at Michigan Medicine, St. Joe's, and elsewhere. Give Lewis Jewelers a call and talk with their non-commissioned staff, including Jonathan, Keith, Lucina, Libby, DK, and Sean. They will get you what you want, what you need, and nothing more. Whether it's a special occasion or a personal celebration, Lewis Jewelers has that special gift for you. Lewis is where Ann Arbor gets engaged. Call them at 734-994-5111 or visit them online at lewisjewelers.com. Lewis Jewelers, proud partner of Michigan Athletics and Sports Talk 1050. WTK, the ticket.